lot about you know, kind of where you stand on possibly getting rid of Minnesota's personal income tax. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that. Is this something that you still think we should do, and how can we do it?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer that there are timing is everything. And sometimes, well, even this tour we just took, I mean, what caused this business to develop? A tragedy where all of a sudden someone is paralyzed. Right now, I think the timing in Minnesota is absolutely right. We've got a $10 to $12 billion surplus present. We know that we've been slow on the draw to get rid of taxation on Social Security. That should happen. It should have happened a long time ago. There's only a dozen states, maybe 13, that still do that. So I think rather than just eliminate taxing Social Security, which I think we should do as a standalone bill, I think we should say this is the time to have the big conversation. Could Minnesota become one of those 20% of the states in the nation that don't have a personal income tax? If we could, would that charge us forward to becoming that economic hub of the Midwest? I think both questions are reasonable to ask. So we've done a lot of spreadsheet studying over the last 6-8 weeks. I met with John Phelan from the Center for the American Experiment. And it appears that if we said that we wanted to try to phase it in over 8 years, where we got rid of our personal income tax, if we wanted to get halfway there in 4 years, we'd have to take 3 steps. The first step would be reduce our spending by 10%, which would basically mean go back to 2019, which would put our general fund budget at $47 billion instead of $52. And right now, it's a 75% increase in about 11 years. So that's a big increase. The average wage earner during that time increased 25%, but the government took a 75% raise. So we basically take 10% off. In the next 3 years, we'd cap. And we'd use the surplus to backfill. And at 4 years in 2027, we would have reduced each one of our income tax brackets by 50%. We'd be in the black. And we would have accomplished 50% of our mission. Then we would press pause and ask ourselves, can we get the rest of the way or not? Two good things would have happened. Because we capped our expenses year 2, 3, 4, we will get, if you will, just through inflation of revenues, a bump. So we'll have dollars there, sequestered, if you will. And then the other thing is there should be a real payoff in terms of having more corporate activity coming to Minnesota, you know, whether it's a Fortune 500 company or whether it's just keeping Minnesota companies that are developing into new downstream businesses, subsidiary businesses, things like that. It's hard to quantify how much impact that would have. The third thing that's sort of the wild card in all this is if we would move forward with letting miners mine, we've got arguably a $1 trillion industry in metals in the northern part of the state. We have 95% of the nickel reserves right now, and this is desperately needed in America, and frankly, in the world. So I think these are the kinds of, I think, big discussions that oftentimes political types will avoid because it makes you sound foolish. Well, you can't take away the personal income tax because half of our revenues come from personal income tax. How could you possibly replace a hole that big? I don't know if we can, but I know that if we don't try, we'll never know. And I think that I'm gonna guess that this business right here that we're sitting in, I'm gonna guess that they had decision points similar to that. They didn't know if they could make this work or not, but they knew that if they didn't try, they'd never know. And so I guess they took some risks. They had maybe there were some months or years where they took 3 steps forward, 2 steps backwards. I think that's okay, but I think we have to have the conversation.
I did have like one follow-up question. So how can we do this while still making sure that we're supporting education and higher education? Like, for example, Marshall, Southwest Minnesota State is a really big part of like the local community and the economy. I mean, like if we start cutting back on tax funding, I mean, what happens to education?
I think with any big conversation, you can always come up with the questions that will scare people out of having the big discussion. You asked, I think the way you phrased it, how can we be sure? You can't be. What you'd have to do is you'd have to break it down. You'd have to have people that are accountants and experts and MMB people would dig into it and say, it's not doable. Or they say, well, we could get 50% there and everything would stay the same. We'd still be funding Southwest. We'd still be funding the university. There may be in some situations revenue potential streams that might not have been recognized. Tennessee gets a fair amount of their income through, I believe, the TVA and various sources like that. Florida gets theirs from tourism. Nevada gets theirs from tourism. Washington State chooses a different pathway. But the bottom line is, in Minnesota, we do have this sort of bright, shiny object out there that we could tap into, and that would be mining. That would be nickel and cadmium and copper. And we have some of the richest stores in the entire world. And right now we're saying, we're not going to touch them. We've been mining for more than 100 years. And I was up in Virginia for a press conference last week, and it was interesting when you drive in. I don't know if you've been to Virginia in the last few years, but on one side of the road is this beautiful, pristine lake, which is the drinking water for Virginia. And on the other side of the road is an active mine. So I think the idea that mining is devastating to the ecology and to clean water and all that, I think that's a disconnect. Yet I think it's what's driving or stopping a lot of conversations. So I wouldn't tell you that we can be sure of anything until we start to map it out and say, okay, can we do it or not? What I would love to see is, rather than people saying, oh, that makes me scared, I don't think we can do that, I would say, let's first maybe identify what the big first five questions are. What is our absolute lowest point that we can spend? I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but I've never been involved with a business that wasn't able to reduce 10% if it had to. I've done restaurants, I've done commercial buildings, I've done medical clinics. And if someone told me the world's changing, all of a sudden we're in a recession, whatever, if you have to find 10%, you can find 10%. That's what we'd have to do. We'd have to go back 10%. But no guarantees. But we certainly would not do it if it meant that we were removing, undercutting, eliminating services and things we need. Arguably, if you look at what we spend in teaching in K-12 education, the money is not making its way to the classroom. It's not being deployed in the classroom with teachers. If you look at the graph, where the exponential growth is in terms of educational spending is administrative costs and, if you will, health services in the schools. I was on school board for 10 years. And I remember when a school system like Waconia, with three buildings, we'd have one nurse and more than adequately handled it. Now, many school districts say we have to have a nurse in every building. We have to have a principal in every building. We have to have assistant principal in every building. These layers of administrative support really come with a big price tag.
You mentioned your income tax phase out, phase in plan. Is a sales tax increase still on the table?
I don't think we're advocating at all for a sales tax increase. I think you could ask, what do we tax down, what don't we tax? I mean, I think that that's changed a little bit, but it's conceivable that you could say, well, we're going to tax luxury vehicles. So if a person buys a vehicle that's worth more than $100,000, perhaps there's, you know, but there's all kinds of permutations. Again, as soon as a political candidate mentions that, usually the headline is Jensen's advocating for luxury tax increase or something like that. And that keeps us from having the kinds of conversations that I would hope that we could have.
Big part of your campaign is crime with the riots that happened after the George Floyd protest. You have a plan which includes the State Patrol, National Guard, among other things, as well as making carjacking a harsher crime. How can you convince greater Minnesota that after you implement these, that the Twin Cities are indeed safer?
I don't think there's a magic bullet there. I don't think you get to snap your fingers and flip a switch and say, see, we did it. I think it's going to be, in the 1990s, Minneapolis had a huge, I think they're calling it Murderapolis. Remember those days? I think it's going to be the same way. You've got to get people back on the streets. People have to walk right now. If you're going to work at 7:30 or 8 in the morning, there's a lot of people a little skittish. They're not walking with 8, 12 people on their side. They're walking and there's nobody walking with them for 40 yards and they feel naked and exposed. We all get that. When you see the Minnesota Twins start to draw sellout crowds again, that would be a marker. But if you look what happened at the Twins attendance this year, in June and July, we had some beautiful Saturdays. The Twins were in first place. We couldn't get 20,000 people in the stands. That's a clear marker. People don't feel safe. If you don't feel safe, you're not safe. So I think that remote working, I mean, it works for some companies, not for others. But at some point in time, we need people getting down to the cities again. If that's not going to happen, then we're going to have to look at repurposing some of those spaces and places. Because right now, they're talking to restaurant owners. Restaurant owners are starting to lay off people. Housing starts in the Twin Cities are down 20-25%, and they're going to drop lower because of the interest rate going up. So it's going to be, if I were to give two economic goals that we would do, is one is we have to always remember whatever we incentivize, we'll get more up. So if we want to incentivize behaviors that will get people downtown Minneapolis, then we'll get more of it, and it'll feed on itself. That would be the one thought that I would have. And then the second thing is, if we have a mismatch and we don't fix it, then we're going to have problems. And the mismatch I would refer to there is, as people are coming out of high school, their junior and senior year frequently aren't as full and experienced as it could be. But as they're coming out of high school, we've got to make sure that somehow they're intersecting with our workforce needs. It's not happening right now. We have a terrible mismatch. And so we've got places like this. I asked Jim, I said, are you looking for welders? And he says, we're always looking for welders. And I think, I'm going to guess that there are so many companies in Marshall, New Ulm, Sleepy Eye, Wabash, Wabasso, that are saying the same thing, that there's a mismatch. I think one of the things we've really missed is what happens to kids between 18 and 21. We've been incredibly dense on that. Because I'll tell you what happens. As a family doctor, I've seen this for 40 years. You leave high school. Your parents celebrate your high school achievements. Everybody's got their Hall of Fame in the garage when they have their graduation party, right? Okay. You're flying high, floating high. You choose to go into the trades, or you choose to go into the military, or you choose to go to college, or you choose to work, you choose to join the Peace Corps. Whatever you choose, you're riding high. People have high expectations. The world is your oyster. What happens in the first 24 months if the world isn't your oyster? What happens if you go to college and after 2 years, you don't really have any better idea of what you want to do, and you now have $75,000 worth of debt? At the age of 20, you feel like a failure. You've let your grandparents down, your teachers down. You have $75,000 of debt. You don't know how you're going to pay back, and you're working for $12 an hour. You know what happens? You start wondering about what the world would look like if you weren't there. I'm excited about a community like Marshall. Marty said that Marshall is slightly larger than New Ulm. That's outstanding. We're seeing businesses like this expand what they're doing. That's what we need more of. I'm just going to give you one quick example. I don't know if you saw last week, but I think the government, the federal government gave, I think, over $100 million to North Dakota. You know what for? To build a processing plant. You know what for? To process nickel. You know where it's coming from? Minnesota. We don't know when we're going to be able to get that nickel out of the ground. But when we do, we know that we've already lost the ability to have that second industry stay in Minnesota. We're going to be putting our nickel on railroad trains and ship it to North Dakota, and they are going to prosper. That's horrific. Frankly, we should have the nickel mined here, processed here, and we should be telling Elon Musk, come build a Tesla factory here. Let's have the finished product come off. We can do it. But we're not getting that kind of thing. We haven't had a Fortune 500 company come to Minnesota since 2004 with Mosaic, and they've since left.
So how can Minnesota compete with border states like the Dakotas?
Make life more attractive, get more employees here, make it so companies want to come in, reduce regulations, reduce corporate taxes, change the culture in which we're asking corporations to do business. Right now it feels hostile. When you've got to fight your way through the MPCA, the DNR, every step of the way it feels like you're walking in cement boots. Who the hell wants to do business here? I was talking to a guy, my nephew yesterday, his company that he works for, they're building a $1.8 billion facility in Indiana to start making chips. I said, why? Why aren't you doing it in Minnesota? That's their headquarters in Bloomington. Mm-hmm. He said, Indiana's way easier to work with. It's a problem.
All good?
Thanks.